From the heart of our nation's capital, sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council, filling in for Tony Perkins. And today we will be discussing issues both at home and abroad. U.S. officials from the Department of Defense headed to Ankara, Turkey yesterday to dissuade Turkish President Erdogan from invading northeast Syria, where many ethnic minorities live, including approximately 100,000 Christians. The Washington Post reported that Turkey has amassed tens of thousands of troops on the Syrian border, and Erdogan is planning on launching a full-scale military operation against U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters east of the Euphrates. I will talk with Bassam Ishuk, the former executive director of the Syrian Human Rights Organization and the president of the Syriac National Council of Syria. In my second and third segments, I'll talk with Gordon Chan, the author of The Coming Collapse of China, who will discuss the latest in the U.S.-China trade war. On Monday, Beijing responded to President Trump's threat to place new tariffs on Chinese goods by letting its currency, the Chinese yuan, sink to the weakest level in over a decade and ordering state-owned companies to reportedly halt their purchases of U.S. agricultural products. Gordon Chan will help me break that down. And at 42 past the hour, most of the folks on the left, especially the Democratic presidential candidates, have minimized the power of prayer at moments of tragedy like the mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio over the weekend. But Pastor Greg Laurie, the senior pastor of Harvest Christian Fellowship, urges us to not only pray for the victims and their families, but for America itself. And he will join me from Riverside, California. As a reminder, you can find our broadcast today at TonyPerkins.com, Tony Twitter handle at T Perkins, my Twitter handle at Sarah P. Perry. You can find information on today's broadcast, the resources and guests that we've had today at our website. Well, U.S. officials from the Department of Defense headed to Ankara, Turkey yesterday to dissuade Turkish President Erdogan from invading northeast Syria, where many ethnic minorities live, including approximately 100,000 Christians. The Washington Post reported Sunday that Turkey has amassed tens of thousands of troops on the Syrian border, and Erdogan is planning on launching a full-scale military operation against U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters east of the Euphrates. I would urge our listeners to check out a special link at TonyPerkins.com that features our FRC speaker series, wherein we hosted, as part of the Religious Liberty Ministerial, an offshoot event. We held an eight-person panel addressing the topic, "Will Religious Freedom Survive in Northeast Syria?" There is both a written overview and the ability to watch a 90-minute video presentation in which my next guest participated. His analysis will be important to this situation. Bassam Ishuk is the former executive director of the Syrian Human Rights Organization and the president of the Syriac National Council of Syria. Bassam, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
So, for the listeners who are tuning in today, can you give us an accurate picture of how this imminent threat by Turkey in its level of seriousness is to these individuals? Turkey and obviously Syria are sharing a border together, but what is the seriousness of this particular threat posed by Turkey to Syria?
It is a very serious threat because Turkey has already occupied other regions in Syria west of the Euphrates. And as you mentioned, our region is very diverse and has a large Kurdish population. And Turkey has a problem, actually, with the Turkish ethnic groups in Syria. They occupied in March of 2018 a region called Afrin, which had a Kurdish population, They occupied it, but with military militias that called themselves Free Syria Army, but they are really religious extremist groups who have since imposed a religious model in Afrin, and they did ethnic cleansing for more than 100,000 Kurds, and they brought in their place Arab population that is pro-Turkey. So we already have a model of what Turkey and its mercenaries, the Syrian mercenaries that they have hired, will do if they occupy a place that has Kurdish population. So as I said, the so-called safe zone area they're requesting, they want it to be 20 miles deep and stretch about 400 kilometers. This is like the size of Connecticut or like the size of the country of Lebanon. Nobody needs that much square area from a neighboring country to establish a safe zone, especially at a border that has never posed any threat to Turkey. Turkey is like the second largest military in NATO. A small group, armed groups in Syria, like the one that is accused of being run by the Kurds, cannot pose a threat to a large army, well-equipped army with lots of modern weaponry like the Turkish army. So we think, we believe, based on recent history, as recent as last year, and on history of the past of Turkey, that this is really another Turkish attempt to do ethnic cleansing and to capture land. And then once they do this, they're trying to use a religious model very similar to ISIS. And what we have there today as a model is a very modern, secular model that promotes in practice religious freedom, which has really never happened before in the Middle East. So this is, I think, the choice and the threat that as people from northeast Syria we are facing. Do we live according to our choices in a society that is secular, that is tolerant, that tolerates religious diversity and tolerates gender equality, tolerates freedom and democracy? Or do we go back to the past and establish religious kind of models and institutions and society that is run for the benefit of a central foreign neighboring country.
And this is the climax to sort of a years-long dispute between both countries, Syria and Turkey, both of whom are NATO allies, over U.S. support for these Syrian Kurdish fighters who have been on the front lines fighting the Islamic State, but whom Turkey considers to be a terrorist threat to its own security. So can you explain a little bit why Turkey believes that these Kurdish fighters are somehow a threat to them?
Okay, so Turkey has, has a large Kurdish population inside its own country. They're estimated to be around 20 million Kurdish Turks. And there is a party called the PKK, the Labour Party there. And they have had a struggle against Turkey, accusing it of oppressing the Kurds in Turkey. Mm-hmm. Now, the founder of that party, Öcalan, Abdullah Öcalan, is serving a life sentence in a Turkish prison. And the Kurds who are in Syria, although they are Syrians and they are of, you know, they are not Turks or they are not affiliated directly with the PKK. However, they adhere a lot to a lot of Mr. Abdullah Öcalan's ideology, which is the ideology of secularism, religious freedom, gender equality. So they're trying the Turks to accuse the Syrian Kurdish political party called PYD of being one and the same as PKK, and then label it as terrorist group, and then use that as an excuse to come and occupy a large square area of Syria.
When, in fact, it was Turkish military forces who worked with jihadist mercenaries to overrun the Syrian city of Afrin. So they had displaced hundreds of thousands of individuals searching for Christians, burning churches, and yet Erdogan's regime is now professing that the area, these Kurdish fighting forces who have single-handedly worked with the United States to defeat the Islamic State, are the real threat. So here we are, really, with the counter-dialogue between the United States and Turkey on whether or not there will be this compromise of a safe zone. Syrian Christians calling on the U.S. to save them, saying that we hope and pray that as we have defended the world against ISIS, the world will not abandon us now. So compelling to hear these words. So really, in the last minute that we have left here, it appears that everything hangs in the balance. So what is next?
Okay, so now the Christians who live in northeast Syria, they're the offspring of the Christian who fled Turkey 100 years ago after Turkish massacre of Armenians and Syriacs and Christians. So for Christians living in northeast Syria, it's the bully coming. Mm. It is not a safe zone. You know, it's a threat of life. It's history, bloody history repeating itself. Especially with Erdogan, Islamic extremist views and political party that he runs in Turkey. So all the, and then what they have been happening in Afrin, where new churches that were established, allowed by the Kurds to open. So we had the first Kurdish churches ever in the Middle East. They were closed, as you mentioned, by Turkey and the mercenaries when they occupied Afrin. They will do the same thing if they come into northeast of Syria, because they are the same people who did these acts in Afrin a year ago.
Yes, they did. They did. Bassam Ishaq has been my excellent guest, the Syriac National Council of Syria. We will be following what happens next in Turkey and Syria and what happens to the Christians who are in this area being potentially the next target. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up, we'll discuss the U.S.-China trade war, and I'll talk with Gordon Chang.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C. And learn how you can, too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch on this Tuesday edition. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, sitting in for Tony Perkins. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is our podcast and broadcast website. You can find more information and resources there on today's show. Follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins, or me if you'd like at Sarah P. Perry. Well, it seems that all eyes are and continue to be on China. Beijing responded to President Trump's threat to place new tariffs on Chinese goods on Monday by letting its currency, the Chinese yuan, sink to the weakest level in over a decade and ordering state-owned companies to reportedly halt their purchases of U.S. agricultural products. Now, the onshore Chinese yuan weakened to worse than 7 per U.S. dollar, hitting its lowest level since 2008, as Beijing looks to cushion the blow from Trump's tariffs. A weaker yuan makes Chinese goods cheaper for overseas buyers, which may be necessary as China just lost its spot as the U.S.'s biggest trading partner, taken over now by Mexico. Well, joining me now to provide his analysis is Gordon Chang, columnist, blogger, television pundit, lawyer, and author of The Coming Collapse of China. Gordon, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Well, President Trump has positioned himself as the pro-deal, the deal-making president, the author of Art of the Deal. But do you think in this instance with China, he has pushed the envelope too far?
Well, I don't think there's going to be a deal with China, certainly not a fundamental deal that goes through all the issues that we're interested in, such as the theft of U.S. intellectual property and the increasing violations of China's World Trade Organization obligations to us. Beijing right now, for various reasons, is just not in the mood for compromise. And Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, has made it clear that he is going to keep his state-dominated economic system, which in many ways is just incompatible with the global trading system and with China's obligations to us. So, no, I don't see a deal anytime soon, Sarah.
So trade data released Friday by the Department of Commerce showed that U.S. imports from China fell by 12% in the first 6 months of the year. So Mexico has now supplanted China as the U.S.'s biggest trade partner. Let me reference a tweet by the president, one I'm sure of which you're already aware. Quote, China dropped the price of their currency to an almost historic low. It's called currency manipulation. Are you listening, Federal Reserve? This is a major violation that will greatly weaken China over time, end quote. So last week, Trump said that beginning September 1st, the U.S. would place a 10% tariff on the remaining $300 billion in Chinese goods and went ahead with the announcement despite objections from his advisors and staff. So has he overplayed his hand in attempting to bring China to the table, understanding that Xi Jinping has taken kind of a predatory approach to economic domination?
Yeah, I do not think that the president has overplayed his hand. I think the president has done exactly the right thing. You know, unfortunately, the Chinese are not in the mood to deal with the international community in good faith, and they're certainly not in the mood to deal with us in good faith. And really, the only thing that we can do at this time is try to disengage from China. And the way to do that is to impose these tariffs on Chinese goods. That'll convince factories to leave China. You know, some of them will come back to the U.S., Sarah, but even if they go to Vietnam or other places, that's a win for us for a number of reasons. Because, you know, commerce has been fueling China's military. China's military threatens us. They've harmed our service personnel last year with injuring the pilots of a C-130. They've gone after our diplomats, causing brain injuries in Guangzhou last spring. So we should not be trading with a country that is harming Americans. I think the president is doing absolutely the right thing right now.
That's encouraging to hear, because for people who don't necessarily understand the specifics, both of the trade war itself, but more critically, particularly in this instance, people hear tariffs and they think my pocketbook will suffer. I will go to the grocery store now and things that I purchase, I will go to a big box store, things that I purchase, all will be more expensive. And for example, if I am an American parent and I'm going to feed or clothe or purchase supplies and equipment for my kids, I immediately think this will make things more expensive. Do you find that to be the case?
Well, for a very limited period of time, I think things will be slightly more expensive, but it really will not be noticeable. And one of the reasons is that China is depreciating its currency, which means that goods are going to be cheaper in U.S. dollar terms. So people aren't going to see it. But the more important issue is that within 6 months, maybe 9 months, perhaps even a year, these factories are going to be out of China, and that means that goods are going to be produced in locations which are not affected by the additional tariffs, and that means it's just not an issue. And the other reason why this is not going to be important for us is because we know, for instance, that the big box retailers probably will reduce their margins on some Chinese goods. And, you know, when you look at the whole thing, it's not price inflation is just not showing up in the data. Clearly it's this move to tariff Chinese goods has not affected people noticeably. And I think that whatever it is, we're going to have to suffer some short-term pain in order to ensure that the Chinese stop stealing our U.S. intellectual property, stop committing trade violations, stop undermining the U.S. economy in general.
So smartphone maker, we've all heard, Huawei has pulled further ahead of Apple and China. Trump's blacklisting of the company has made it sort of the patriotic choice now of Americans. And presumably all of the problems can be reversed if America and China come to the table. But based on your comments, with which I wholeheartedly agree, it does not seem that the president has overplayed his hand, nor that in the long term we will feel significant cost effects from these decisions. So the fact that Trump tweeted Apple will not be given a tariff waiver or relief for Mac Pro parts that are made in China, make them in the USA, is, I think, for those individuals who are following this story, like you and me, a bit of an encouragement. And it leaves other providers, as you've mentioned, to be able to step in and fill in the gaps. You are listening to Washington Watch. We have the good fortune of keeping Gordon Chang on for another segment. And he'll join us right after this. I'm Sarah Perry, and you are listening to Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. TonyPerkins.com is our website for the broadcast. I am continuing my discussion with Gordon Chang, a pundit, lawyer, blogger, columnist, analyst, and author of The Coming Collapse of China. We are talking the trade war between China and the United States and President Trump's announcement that he would be levying tariffs, further entrenching the battle lines for both parties. Now, Gordon, we talked a little bit about the fact that Trump said beginning September 1st, the U.S. would place a 10% tariff on the remaining $300 billion of Chinese goods, and then said he could on Twitter, quote, always do more, adding to the 10% tax up to well beyond 25% if necessary. Is he, first of all, well within his right to do that? And B, what would the natural consequence of something like that be as concerns these international tensions?
President Trump has the authority under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974 to levy those tariffs. And he's done so as a remedy for the theft of U.S. IP. China steals intellectual property, hundreds of billions of dollars. And there is a U.S. Trade Representative's report which justifies those tariffs. The effect of this is going to be ratcheting up pressure on China. I mean, he started at 10% with, I suppose, the hope of getting Beijing to the bargaining table to talk about this. Xi Jinping, as we mentioned before, doesn't seem to want to talk to the United States. You know, we saw a couple of pernicious acts just the last 24, 36 hours. It was, of course, letting the currency depreciate past the 7.1 level that you mentioned. But also, Beijing is not buying U.S. agricultural products at all. They've given an order to state enterprises not to buy U.S. Soy and other things. So, you know, this is the point where probably President Trump will have to increase the tariff rate from 10 to whatever percent, perhaps 25.
Now, that's interesting that you bring up the agricultural products and the dictation by China to stop purchasing those U.S. products. Now, this is a reversal, right? Because Beijing just said it had purchased several tons of U.S. soybeans as a gesture of goodwill. So, of course, it has the hallmarks of extending this olive branch in the trade war. So it appears that we are going backwards. But really, it would seem to me that the character of the leader with whom we are dealing in Xi Jinping makes very clear that this trade war will escalate regardless of any perceived gesture of goodwill. Do you agree?
Well, I certainly agree. And by the way, Sarah, although Beijing's official media did say that they bought U.S. agricultural products, as President Trump and others have noted, that did not show up in U.S. customs data. So this really was a propaganda claim not backed up by the facts. You know, we're at a point where the Chinese are not telling the truth. And clearly, when you have that type of situation, you just don't have the trust for a trade agreement. We know, as President Trump has said, that the Chinese have withdrawn commitments that they made to U.S. trade negotiators. And we also know that President Xi Jinping did not, in fact, agree, buy more ag, as he said he was going to at the Osaka G20 at the end of June. So we have a pattern of Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the Communist Party, President of the Chinese state, just not following through on what he's saying. And President Trump, justifiably, is really upset.
Let me switch gears in these few minutes that we have left here. We've seen the ninth consecutive weekend of protests in Hong Kong over an extradition bill that would send Hong Kong nationals back to mainland China. Carrie Lam, the chief executive there in Hong Kong, has said that essentially these protesters are bringing Hong Kong to the brink. Do you think that the protests, the continuing protests against this bill and against China and its patent human rights violations, do you think they are justified?
Well, I certainly think they are, because Beijing has not honored its promise of one country, two systems. That's a promise to leave Hong Kong alone for 50 years. Clearly, Beijing has repudiated its treaty with Britain on Hong Kong. So, you know, Beijing, again, has shown its untrustworthiness. People in Hong Kong right now believe that this is the last stand for their home, and that's why, you know, we are seeing very little criticism of the violence of student demonstrators by the mass of Hong Kong people. What we've got right now, Sarah, in Hong Kong is almost open warfare as China has unleashed the triads against the demonstrators. This is going to get extremely bloody, and this is unfortunate. But this is the nature of the Chinese communist regime.
Well, and in fact, we know that Pence himself has signaled openness to sanctions over China's human rights abuses. Just recently, talked about using the Global Magnitsky Act to sanction top officials, where more than a million Uyghur Muslims are being held in internment camps. So what China does, we are not turning a blind eye to, which is an encouragement, I believe, for individuals who are listening in on this story to know that these trade tariffs are really not just about trade, but about so much more, aren't they?
Yeah, certainly that's the case. You know, we've seen this International Freedom Religious Roundtable that Vice President Pence attended yesterday with people who've been victims of Chinese religious persecution. There's a relentless war on faith, including Christians. And it's got to end. We got to do everything we can to protect freedom of religion.
Gordon Chang, columnist, author, pundit, analyst, expert, has been my great guest today. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, filling in for Tony Perkins. When we come back, we will talk about whether or not our prayers are the appropriate response to national tragedies. We're hearing a lot about shootings, but we know the church has a distinct role, and I am joined by the excellent Greg Laurie. Coming up next on Washington Watch.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council, filling in for Tony Perkins on this Tuesday edition. TonyPerkins.com is our website for today's broadcast. Follow Tony at T. Perkins on Twitter, or me, if you'd care to, at Sarah P. Perry. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of our second segment, where we were talking about human rights abuses and a trade war, let's talk about another type of war on our home soil. We have been reading extensively in the media about these tragedies from California to Texas to Ohio, and it is a heartbreaking sequence of chronological events that devastates us, not only as Americans, but particularly as Christians who are called to be Christ to others. In the wake of the tragic mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, over just this past weekend, Christians have prayed that God would strengthen and comfort the victims and their families. However, lots of folks on the left, this time, as well as in previous incidents where we have dealt with the same tragedy and violence, especially the Democratic presidential candidate, seem to dismiss the power of prayer and suggest that it is a meaningless cliche. In late June, during one of the Democratic candidate debates, presidential hopeful and Democratic Senator Cory Booker had this to say about prayer.
For millions of Americans, this is not a policy issue. This is an urgency. And for those who have not been directly affected, they're tired of living in a country where their kids go to school to learn about reading, writing, and arithmetic, and how to deal with an active shooter in their school. This is something that I'm tired of, and I'm tired of hearing people, all they have to offer is thoughts and prayers.
Well, he makes no bones about the fact that he feels that this is a useless platitude, but thankfully, some state administrators, some state officials, even in Texas, where Governor Greg Abbott believes in the God of the Bible, countered by saying, quote, "We ask God to bind up the wounds of all who've been harmed," end quote. Joining me now with his biblical insight is Pastor Greg Laurie, the senior pastor of Harvest Christian Fellowship in Riverside, California. He started with 30 people in a Bible study, and God has transformed a small group into a church of some 15,000 people. And today, Harvest is one of the largest churches in America. In 1990, Pastor Lori began holding large-scale public evangelistic events called Harvest Crusades. And since that time, more than 7.9 million people have participated in Harvest Crusades in person or online. And in fact, the Southern California Harvest Crusade will take place Friday, August 23rd through Sunday, August 25th at Angel Stadium in Anaheim, California. Learn more at harvest.org. That is harvest.org. Pastor Lori has authored over 70 books, including Johnny Cash, The Redemption of an American Icon. Pastor Lori, it is a pleasure to welcome you to Washington Watch.
Sarah, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
You have said that you believe that these two mass shootings are the result of a spiritual crisis in America, not just the individual evil that is in the heart of these two individuals, but emblematic of a bigger spiritual crisis. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think right now people are retreating to their political corners, and they're trying to make this, oh, this one person is, you know, repeating rhetoric that he heard from the president. And then I guess the shooter in Ohio was a supporter of Elizabeth Warren. I mean, come on, let's get beyond this. This is not what this is about. I think mental illness may play a role in these things. We don't want to discount that. And coming back to Mr. Booker's statement, all they offer is thoughts and prayers. That's not true. We don't only offer thoughts and prayers. We believe in law enforcement, and the law enforcement responded quickly there in Dayton, Ohio. I mean, amazing how quickly they got in there and took care of that situation. We believe in thoughtful legislation, but here's what we're saying. It can be a cliche to say thoughts and prayers, and I have to acknowledge that sometimes that's thrown about too quickly, and I've even seen it abbreviated to just thoughts. Well, thoughts aren't going to do a lot of good, but prayer can do a lot of good, because ultimately, Sarah, this is a spiritual battle that we're in. And here's the person who has not been talked about that I think is the real power behind this. He's not running for office, and he's not in office, but he's powerful, and his name is Satan. And the Bible says he's the god of this world. He's the prince of the power of the air. And, you know, Jesus said of the devil that he comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Yes. So we cannot discount the fact that these young men who went and committed these horrific acts of violence were not, in fact, demon-possessed, or at the very least, inspired by the devil. And, yes, there may have been mental illness there as well. But this is something that we need to understand. We need to pray about. We need to pray for our country. We need to pray for protection in America, of course, from those that wish us harm on the outside, but even those that wish us harm in the inside. And could this be something of a wake-up call for America and Americans to turn to the Lord and say, Lord, we do not have a human solution to all of this. We're asking for divine intervention.
I'm encouraged, Pastor Lori, to hear you mention the role that evil has, and specifically the role that Satan himself has, making clear in Scripture, obviously, that he comes to steal, kill, and destroy. This isn't just the pre-existing of the depraved human heart, which it is. We know that man is sinful and that we are all fallen. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. But indeed, this is precisely the kind of thing that Satan would relish. And for those of us who ascribe to the truth of the Bible and its inerrant word to us, we can't discount the fact that there is evil taking place on another level. We understand that the battle is not against flesh and blood. So to say that we can separate this from what the Bible so clearly says about the influence of the destroyer, to me, I think separates that ultimately and inappropriately from what we know as Christians to be really going on. So, Pastor Lori, I'd love your thoughts. How do we as Christians respond to this kind of senseless violence and hatred? Again, we all know that we are sinful. We know we've all fallen short. But as the church, as the body of Christ, how do we respond to these kinds of senseless acts?
Well, it's an excellent question, Sarah. I think, first of all, if you know anybody that's been a victim of violence or has even just experienced a tragedy, our role as Christians is to comfort. You know, we serve the God of all comfort. And I personally resent it when someone would say, prayers don't do any good. Are you kidding me? Mm. Prayers can make all the difference in the world. And I can speak to this personally because, you know, 11 years ago, our son Christopher was killed in an automobile accident.
Yes.
And I had thousands of Christians from around the country say they were praying for me. And, you know, it's almost as though, Sarah, I could feel their prayers. Mm-hmm. And they would write little words of encouragement to me and remind me of verses. And I was buoyed by those prayers. So we should pray for the people that are the family members of those that have lost their lives in these tragic shootings that have happened recently. And we know these things are going to happen in the future. And so we do need to pray and we do need to comfort. But I think the church and Christians, we have two secret weapons that we do not employ often enough. And I don't think those secret weapons are boycott and protest, though there's a place for that. Nor do I think those weapons are register and vote, though I really think that's important for Christians to do. But our secret weapons, if you will, are prayer and gospel proclamation. You know, the way I see it is we live in a scary world. People are afraid. You know, I heard that there's a interest in bulletproof backpacks for children on campuses has gone up. And so yes. Parents are afraid right now. So pray for your children. Pray for your schools. Pray for your nation. Pray for those who are in law enforcement. Pray that God sends a spiritual awakening to America and the kinds of people that get into these crazy manifestos and other things and then go and commit acts of violence. We pray they would come to Christ and have their heart changed. But then there's gospel proclamation, because we can walk into a situation like this and say there's a God in heaven who loves you. And despite the pain that you're facing right now, he cares for you. And you can call upon him and he can comfort you like no human can comfort you. There's nothing there for you apart from him that can help you in the way that he can help you. So these are things we should not be embarrassed about or ashamed of. And so I think it's a wonderful thing to say thoughts and prayers, but I would put the emphasis not on thoughts, but on prayers. And people should not dismiss prayer, because our nation was built on our founding fathers who believed in the power of prayer. There wouldn't even be an America today if it were not for so many prayers that went up to heaven as we established this nation.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because truly we have recognized for so long that, as the word promises us, the prayers of the righteous availeth much. So for us
That's right.
as believers to say, I will pray for you, is perhaps yes. one of the more meaningful things we can offer. And listen, we are here at a policy group, at an advocacy organization here in the heart of the nation. But we do what we can outside the purview of our relationship with Christ and our understanding of how
That's right.
much prayer works. And what an incredible time. Boy, you want to talk about timing. The Southern California Harvest Crusade coming up. Boy, I have chills thinking about how effective that will be. What an opportunity to say, here we are in the midst of darkness. Let me talk about the light. I'm excited for you. Can you tell me a little bit about the event?
Yes. And before I do, just let me say a word about Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council. I so appreciate the work that you do. And when I say that our focus should be on prayer and proclamation, I am not diminishing the importance of Christians out there like you are making a difference in policy. And I'm also saying that I think it's wonderful when people, men and women of God, run for office, because the Bible says when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. So there is a place for all of those things. And I'm thankful that you are doing that. So I want to just underscore that point. And then answering your question. Yes, we're going to hold this event. It's our 30th crusade. So this is interesting, Sarah. This is the longest running, large scale evangelistic event in American history. There's never been anything like it. And so, and we've seen, and I'm not exaggerating because we keep very accurate numbers, we've seen 500,000 people walk forward on the field and make a profession of faith since we started 30 years ago. So here's the cool thing about this event is if you're in Southern California, of course, come and join us at Angel Stadium. But this is a national and even an international event via media, modern media. We webcast this out. We have apps you can download for your iOS device, your Android device, for Apple TV, for the Roku box, and you can watch this live as it happens. And so we have seen ultimately more people come in attendance and come to the Lord watching it online. And so we have people who tell us they're watching from all around the world. So if you go to harvest.org, you can find out more how you can participate in the event. But it's as simple as this. You would just call up a friend and say, hey, click this link and watch this event right now. Or you would invite some friends over to your house and fire it up on your big screen TV if you have one, or your little black and white one, whatever you have. I don't know if anyone has little black and white TVs anymore, but someone does. Or, you know, you can watch it on your tablet, or you can watch it on your phone. So wherever people are, they can participate in this. And I remember hearing one story, Sarah, of a lady who was watching the event with her non-believing husband. She walked into the kitchen for a moment and came back, and she said he was on his knees in front of the computer praying with you as you led people in prayer there at Angel Stadium. So the Word of God can penetrate people's hearts right through the internet and all this media. So I hope people will take advantage of it.
Oh, I hope so, too. Harvest.org is the website. This is Friday, August 23rd through Sunday, August 25th. How encouraging to be reminded of the fact that God is sovereign. Even in the midst of difficulty, we know that we are not promised an easy life. In fact, we are promised difficulty. The word says so explicitly, but we are also promised a victory through Christ alone. So we are excited because this event follows at such a critical juncture in American discourse about all things dark, when you have an opportunity through your ministry to point the way to the light. Pastor Greg Laurie, thank you for joining me today. We are praying for you, for your ministry, and we will be watching at harvest.org. Thank you for joining me today on Washington Watch. It has been our great pleasure to talk to you about some of the difficult, some of the compelling, some of the challenging issues of the day. TonyPerkins.com is our broadcast site. Follow Tony at T Perkins, or me, if you'd like, at Sarah P. Perry. You and I will be spending more time together this week. You have been listening to Washington Watch. We'll talk to you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.